everybody. I'm Amber Rose, the religious hippie, and I host the podcast A Catholic's Perspective. Join me every 2 weeks as I release episodes targeted towards helping young Catholics navigate their ever-changing secular world while staying strong in their faith. Whether you are a Catholic or not, all are welcome here. So if this is something that interests you, feel free to tune in. You can find A Catholic's Perspective on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. I hope to see you there. Bye!
Life is a quest for logic and reason. It is a quest to find balance between science and faith. Life is a quest for knowledge and understanding. But most importantly, it's a quest for personal discovery. Whatever your quest, knowing yourself is the beginning of all wisdom. Welcome to Quest. Hi, Matisse. Welcome to the Quest podcast.
Thank you so much for having me, Todd.
Well, I'm glad to get to talk to you again. It's been a long time. We were talking before the recording when we might have seen each other last. And we both did this thing for Shatree Center like a month before COVID shut the world down. Do you remember doing that with Lisa and that the team up there? I think there was some yoga, and I think what were you doing there? Did you have the bowls? Were you?
I was doing sound. Yeah. Yes, and it was, before the world turned inside out. So it was back when it was easy to have in person group experiences in New York.
Right, for sure, and. I think for a while we weren't sure if we'd ever be able to do anything in person again. It was really odd seeing how people had to pivot to do other things. And one of the things we'll get into in this episode is about your horses. And we were both in Garrison around that time. That Shatree function was in the city, but we were both living up in Garrison, a little north of the city. And you had all your horses up there, your horse, you did all your horse constellations and workshops and things up there. And I so wanted to get over and see that. I remember you calling me one day, because it was literally like a mile down the road. Like, we weren't even that far apart. Mm-hmm. I could probably walk to where you live. And I remember you saying, yeah, I'll be up at like 7 a.m. if you want to come over. I'll be, shoveling crap in the barn. And I was like, 7 a.m. No. This is a little early, but I really regret it because I'm not close to you at all. We're like 2,000 miles apart because I think you're up in Northern California a little bit, but for the people that don't know you, for listeners who aren't familiar with you, tell everyone a little about your background and what you do.
Yeah. So it's funny when I begin to explore my path in the healing arts and in consciousness, it really begins in the creative arts. My previous life, I was in theater and working in film and television and music. And I had an event in my family where someone had a mental health crisis and was hospitalized. And the immediacy of that experience led me to ask very different questions. I was 22 years old at the time, graduating from film school, and I really believe in the power of story to transform, to heal, and to humanize the human tribe. And when that event happened, it redirected me to more immediate modalities and traditions that focus on helping people transform and integrate mind, body, and spirit. So it was simultaneously a family crisis and a spiritual emergence for me that, of course, began with my own healing experiences, working with sound, working with breath, kind of like an early 20s seeker sampling what's available and trying things on as you do in the beginning and finding my way to the practices that became what I would eventually offer. So that included actually going back to school for a master's degree in transpersonal psychology. And my focus there was eco-spirituality. how the individual healing or creative process really cannot thrive independently of the natural world. So that was my main area of scholarship and inquiry. And that led me to certain indigenous teachers in Peru. It led me to working really intimately with sound and music for transcendence. And I really landed on the healing power of non-ordinary states of consciousness. And this was kind of beginning, like the beginning of our culture's language around psychedelic assisted therapy. And I knew in my heart there were ways to create journeys into other worlds and altered states that were safe and accessible to everybody. Those plants and fungi that are illegal, that was not my path to work with those and at the time. And there are also a lot of contraindications. And as I graduated, actually after I graduated, I was introduced to Sarah Fancy of Silver Horse Ranch down in San Diego. And she ended up becoming my mentor, who I apprenticed with to learn this particular offering of horse constellations. During this time, I had been married and divorced. I had started working really in the area of feminine creative power and orienting to what is possible when we are on our path of wholeness. So my work is trauma-informed, typical constellations, which exist without the horses independently, is an ancestral model. But I learned that by orienting to feminine creative power, or the power of merging the individual with the natural world for healing, created really, really incredible fields for love and truth and transformation. And the world of the horses ended up being that altered state that I was seeking to deliver. It became even more relevant in a world of Zoom and online sessions to have this offering where people could be fully present with all their senses and what I call getting pony stoned, or having expanded awareness through the presence of the horses.
Right, right. Well, there's so much I want to dig into here. You've given so many questions I want to get to. But let's go back to the beginning. You know, I don't know how much, you know, we should bring up about your family in this, but what I can say, and you can elaborate on this if you want, is you have a father who worked in television. Was your mom a dancer? I couldn't remember if your mom was on Broadway or something.
Yes.
Was
she? She owns an off-Broadway theater. She's an artistic director of a theater. Yeah.
Well, so you have a family in entertainment. And what I'm curious about, I've actually been listening to your dad's podcast, which I really like. Mm-hmm. And I want to know, did you grow up spiritual or religious? Let's go back to young Matisse. What was early life like there for you? Were you already
Beautiful question. Yeah, definitely. I would say the first thing that comes to mind is that I grew up in a household where feelings were always welcome. And bless my parents, both of them had been in therapy a very long time by the time I was born.
Typical with entertainment people, you know?
Yes. So there was a very inclusive and permission-giving environment around feelings. Mm-hmm. And that might not be the initial, like when we think of what spiritual is, but working as a spiritual teacher and in the healing arts, for me, healing is about revealing. So, mm-hmm. And so is creativity. So from a Jungian lens, there's some quote about like, if you don't make the unconscious conscious, it will run your life and you'll call it fate. I was in a household where the dinner conversations and the tender, difficult moments were met with a lot of permission to stay in my body and be with my feelings. I have a beautiful combination of parents because my father is a very strong masculine leader with a very developed feminine sense. And my mom is a very feminine woman with a lot of masculine strength. My mom grew up Catholic, which is kind of funny because their language around saints and their glorification of Mary Magdalene, there's some feminine tenets there. But my mom is truly a syncretic spiritual person, where she was very much identified, like she wouldn't call herself a pagan, but she is a goddess devotee. And so the iconography in my household, the art, the music was this tapestry of global cultures and ancient cultures that were included alongside the Madonna.
Sure.
And yeah. My dad grew up in a Lutheran household, and he is what I would call a Christian mystic. He's not like a, he's a very open-minded, open-hearted believer of the medicine and gifts of Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
And they set a stage for inclusivity and non-judgment, so that I'm trying on different things and it might not be what they've been exposed to, but there's an encouragement, because at the end of the day, well, technically in the beginning of the day, they both pray. They both have a connection with the higher power, and the language of spirit and source was available and accessible to me. And I honor them, and I'm so grateful for them, because I could be more free to be myself while I'm discovering what my authentic self, who she is.
Right. For sure. Right. That's great. That's beautiful. That's a great story. I'm always curious, you know, one of the things I really enjoy about this podcast is I love to see the ingredients that make a person. You know, everyone's so unique. And when they do things that I feel are outstanding, I really want to get to the bottom of what made this person what they are, because just a few ingredients off and you ruin the stew, you know what I mean? So it's sort of, and then I think you pick up new things as life goes on too, that you change the recipe of yourself. But I'm always curious, because childhood development part is so important, with the good and the bad that comes with it. And particularly since most of my guests lean toward having a spiritual or religious focus to kind of the foundation of their life, I'm always curious where that was at. I had parents that never, you know, they had gone to church, you know, every Sunday growing up. And when they got married, they were like, yeah, we're not going to church anymore. So I didn't get any exposure to it. I had to find it on my own when I was 18, 19 years old. And that was my introduction to it. But some people, you know, are with it from their earliest memories. So I'm always
curious. I do have something to add to the soup, to the ingredients, which is I was born with optic nerve atrophy in my left eye. So I'm blind, legally blind in my left eye. And I think that architecture of my human form kind of set the stage immediately. And I had a lot of, I would say, like mystical experiences as a kid. I actually had to have an eye patch on my good eye when I was younger, like 2 years old. And I was really shut down and depressive because the idea was that my left eye would get stronger. And you know, there's that Leonard Cohen quote, the wound is where the light gets in, or from the lens of a medicine woman initiation, like the wound is where the gift is. And I think my vision impairment has given me a metaphysical lens just throughout my life. Mm-hmm. And then there's the, you know, social component of like feeling from a really young age, like that I was deficient or something was wrong with me, feeling self-conscious and insecure, which also led me to the comfort of the world of animals and plants. It's like, I can just love on this tree or this goat and really see them and feel them. And I think in some ways that impairment gave me other sensory and perceptive, you could call them skills or just inclinations, And the funny part about how that links to the horses is they have almost 360 degree vision, but they have a blind spot right in front of them. So I think my hardwiring, my hardware, having this, what would previously be called like a handicap, but which really is just kind of this treasure. The more I have accepted that part of me, that the more my sense of self unconditional love grows. And I can honestly say, when I started my like seeking, I wanted to like fix my vision. I tried a lot of crazy shit. I wanted to like fix it, but what needed to be fixed was my relationship to it.
Right. You mentioned going to college, and you got a degree. You got a master's degree in transpersonal psychology.
Yes.
For those listeners that don't know what that is, how is transpersonal psychology? How is that degree different from just a person who gets a regular degree in psychology? Tell everyone the difference in that.
Got it. So the framework of a healthy mind or person that we're currently using is pretty much adapted or originates in like a white Eurocentric lens from the 1800s. You're usually in the camp of Freud or Jung. And the focus tends to be on pathologies and neuroses, which is only part of the spectrum of the human experience. So transpersonal means beyond the self. So that includes dreams, mystical states, non-ordinary states of consciousness, and experiences where someone connects to something bigger or beyond the self. And there are different applications of transpersonal psychology, but generally it's that we're including this whole spectrum of the human beyond the range of sick and normal, and to include this kind of vast other. And in doing so, that includes looking at frameworks of human becoming that include other cultures and other times. There's an Eastern lens that is integrated. There's an indigenous lens. There's a goddess feminine lens. And I think where many of those unite is in the realm of energy and consciousness, but also earth as a conscious living being.
Yeah. I love all that. I'm so into all that. I wanted to make sure that people really understood that, because you hear that, you know, I think at first people read that and they go, oh, master's degree in psychology. No, wait a second. let's dig into that. So I love that. And I could have an entire episode about that if you ever choose to come back, but we don't have time today to get into it all, because there's so much more I want to get into. When I was reading your bio, it reads in your bio that you studied the power of master plants in the Amazon River Basin. Tell me about that.
Yes. So I have been working with the Shipibo lineage in Pucallpa and Iquitos, Peru. And that pathway sort of began for me in 2012, which I'm realizing kind of echoes back to this origin story of like how I got into this work. But most fully since 2017, I've been doing what are called master plant diets. And that involves going into a devotional process to merge consciousness with various different teachers. So there is ayahuasca involved as part of the cleansing and clearing purification process. But the actual diet is with what would be considered a plant doctor. And during the duration of the dieta, you're in isolation. There's a lot of dry fasting, food fasting, no physical touch, little eye contact, mostly in silence. And you're really opening your body as soil for this plant consciousness to assimilate. And it's very hard work. It's warrior work to be with that level of intimacy and commitment. And it's also, I mean, for me personally, it's like where I go to get my instructions, to really get clean and clear in my physical body. and to let my service and offerings be led from that place versus like the ego will of my mind. And it was actually on a trip to the jungle in 2017 that I saw myself coming out of the belly of a white horse. And that is how the horses came into the field, was through the plants. So there's this openness to interspecies relationships and learning, that has been at the center of my life for quite some time.
Yeah. Yeah. You mentioned going through a divorce, the end of your marriage, we'll say the end of your marriage. And that's when the horses came into your life. Can we talk about that part of your life and kind of maybe what you were going through at the end of the marriage and how the horses came to be in your life?
Yeah, I think my husband and I met very young. And so there's a lot of evolutionary steps that you're moving in different directions and constantly re-choosing each other. And he was a touring DJ and music producer and wanted to live a life where he could really take that as far as he could go. And the deeper I went in my academic work, which was a lot of personal practice, was realizing that I wanted to not just study eco-spirituality, but live in the woods. And I didn't want to just talk and write about working with plants. I wanted to live that as an embodied experience. So there was a disconnect there. But really, I had been going through my Saturn return. I was 29 and a half, and I had been on what would be called the heroine's journey of just figuring out my own conditioning, working with my own energy of descent. And really, I just lost myself in my marriage, and I lost my like divine spark being at the center of my life. And I didn't know how to get it back while being together. So we actually went together to the Amazon with a few other people. And there was this moment where my heart asked me, like, basically said, everything you will ever become is on the other side of your relationship. Are you willing to do what it takes? And I had been holding that in my system, but hadn't spoken about it. I was, as soon as I said yes, is when I saw the horse, and it was kind of this beautiful breadcrumb of like, how, what, where, doesn't matter. I got one image and I felt really strong to like follow that kind of step in a sort of may the road rise to meet you kind of way. Sure. But the reason that's important is because a lot of the women I work with are coming in and out of relationships, or they're coming in and out of a commitment to their sacred work. So it was like, I had to really live it myself and mess up and hurt and make mistakes and grow to have that in my map. So that when I'm sharing and when I'm delivering these containers, that like, it's coming from a place of like, I've been there in my own way and I can hold you in there too.
That's great. I want to know more about the horse constellations and these horse constellation workshops, because I'm not very familiar with it. And my listeners probably aren't either. Let's talk about that. It's called horse constellations. First off, what does that mean?
This is my daily question that I wish I had an elevator pitch for, but I do not do horse astrology. That is kind of the initial thing people think.
Right.
So I'll mention the constellation piece first, because it is a hybrid system. There's equine therapy and horse medicine, and there are what are called systemic constellations, or more commonly family constellations. And that comes from Germany. So the translation of constellation is kind of accurate, but in German, it means placement. So it's a systemic model where you're looking at a family system, but also a business or an intrapersonal system, typically a family system, to explore what is missing or not included, to explore and what needs equilibrium, a balance of give and take, and to restore what are called the orders of love. And the origin point of this work is from a man called Bert Hellinger, who was a psychotherapist in Nazi Germany. And he went to South Africa as a missionary to remove himself from the World War II. And he was sent there to convert Zulu tribe members to Christianity. He ended up being more of an anthropologist, and over 16 years learned their ways of doing ritual and healing, like from tribal wars and other like imbalances within their culture, by including the ancestors, by giving place, physical place, for the elements to exist. So he integrated what he learned from them and started practicing and applying this work to both help the descendants of people who had been what would be considered perpetrators in the war, and the descendants of people that were victims in the war. So working with generations after to do the healing. And it's really based on this idea of the morphogenetic field, or the unified field, the knowing field, the invisible field of energy that connects all things, and having other people be representatives or resonators for the various parts of a constellation. So part of what makes it look and feel very different is, let's say you were having a constellation, Todd, there would be other people there. We would talk about your issue or your question. And I would say, pick someone for mom, dad, little you, or pick someone for your father, grandfather, and your paternal ancestry. And they would go into a space and begin to share somatic information based on what they experience in the role. It's a nuanced thing because it's not channeling, it's not role play. It really is just feeling, sensing, and tracking where you, what needs to be spoken. So there are some healing statements that come in once you're in the field together. And it kind of has this like living map or the scene, which takes me back to being a theater director and being a writer. So that energy of improv is kind of alive and is in my wheelhouse, just applying that in a new way with new sensory perception.
Right, right. That is fascinating. You know, you mentioned equine therapy. I'm in Kentucky a lot, so naturally that's a huge horse state, right? And I hear about equine therapy helping people with PTSDs and things. What is it about the horse and the human that can bring peace to someone in that way? Maybe peace isn't even the right word I want, but can we speak to that? Just sort of what is that effect with the horse, and why a horse? Why couldn't it be something else, a dog or a cat or whatever else, you know, a llama? Yeah.
A great question. I'll answer that. Your second question first. Horses have a very unique evolutionary place in how they developed physiologically as a species. They don't really have natural born predators, and yet they're not predators. They are overly identified as prey animals, but it's actually their predator prey identification is movable. The horses are therefore not motivated by food like a dog. And they're also not completely herd motivated like sheep or deer or something like that. They are motivated by safety, and their physical bodies have many gifts that help us learn by being around them, but also help us feel. Their eyes are incredibly sensitive. Their hearing is incredibly sensitive, and they're very aware of a large environmental field. And as that relates to equine therapy and also the constellations, is that they have a physiological heart that is 5 times larger than ours. So if you've seen a photo of a human's electromagnetic field or an aura or a kinosphere, like that bioenergetic field is kind of not really debatable at this point. It maybe would have been considered woo-woo to talk in these terms previously, but we know there is this field of physical, of non-invisible boundary that's related to our physical body. And the horse's field is 5 times larger. So it's about 40 feet around them. So when we're with the horses, we're actually in training to their biorhythms. So if they are at rest and digest, we can come into coherence in ourselves between the brain and the heart, just in the presence of being with horses, which is kind of funny because a lot of people who work with horses don't actually spend a lot of time just being with their horses. You're always telling them what to do. They have a job. So part of what's almost radical about this work is you are just being with them and you're allowing their movement, their senses to kind of guide you. And my horses in particular, because they know their job, quote, is about feeling and energy, they each have a different flavor that they bring. There's also this incredible bond historically between human and horse, where we have conquered worlds. The patriarchy exists on the back of horses. If you had horses, you could use. And so there's this sort of what I think sweet return to their original medicine, their original gifts in this world of equine therapy or equine facilitated learning. And in addition to the individual horse, the herd of horses embody what I would consider feminine social and leadership values. They are altruistic. They lead through partnerism. They have a way of communicating that's based on like keeping the herd safe and together. And in our culture, especially in a capitalistic culture and modern culture, it's very much about the individual, kind of at the expense of the relational, social, and they bring us into their way of being as a herd, which to me connects us back to the constellation work. It's all about the individual thriving through healthy and right relationship. So they kind of offer this model, like a role model for us to be in community. And then the fact that the sessions are as a group, to me, it's such a benefit not to only be doing our healing work alone, not to be in therapy alone, not to be doing body work alone, but to be in the group while other people are opening their hearts and accessing their pain together.
These may sound like dumb questions, but I really don't know about horses that much. So I want to know these couple things. First off, is the horse actually, is it an intelligent creature? Like, you know, people say the elephant is the smartest of, you know, but is the horse smart? And my second question is, does the sex of the horse matter when it comes to connecting with a human?
The sex of the horse does not matter. There are definitely different ways that they resonate. I have one female horse and 4 male horses. That doesn't come in as much as far as what they're capable of doing. Their level of trust for humans and trust and self-confidence is the thing that makes it work. And I'll just add that I don't have to train my horses to do this. They are all rescue horses. They had physical and behavioral issues that prevented them from being a racehorse or pulling carts or being someone's pony. So they had, you know, traumatic experiences that I think actually help them be more available to other people that have, as teachers and guides. So really that element of if they can trust people and they're balanced in their body, everything they're doing, they're what's called at liberty. So my horses are in a field. We're with a literal field, not just an invisible one. And they're allowed to come in and leave and give us attention or breathe with someone as they desire. There's no requirement or pressure on them to be present in someone's work. So any horse can do it. Any horse can do this as long as they're safe for people to be around. And as far as the intelligence piece, I'm really currently in inquiry around this question of feminine creative power as it exists in the wild. So if you look at bonobos, lions, orcas, elephants, you have matriarchal and matrilineal species. The horses are also in that category. You would have an alpha mare. Gotcha. So that thing you mentioned about the elephants, actually I was in Africa 2 years ago in northern Kenya at an elephant reserve and sanctuary, and I looked in their eyes and I felt such a connection to horses. The main difference is that horses have been through a journey of domestication that the elephants have not collectively gone through as much. Right. So my heart is also really connected to that, actually, because of the deaths and roundups of America's wild horses. So I believe their intelligence is social, emotional, and that it's actually beyond human to relate it to the orcas. And then I'll come back to the horses. The orcas have a part of their brain in or around the corpus callosum, which is at the center of both hemispheres. And that gland, I forget exactly what it is, but it allows them to feel the pod consciousness while also retaining individuality. So they're fully aware of the feeling of the entire collective and their individual intelligence, needs, drives. The horses don't have that same part of their brain, but they do have an extremely large brain, heart, and gut. So their awareness of the whole is superior to that of people. You know, we, in order to commit violence and war, have to dehumanize another person. It's like kind of easier for us to dislodge and see someone as other or different. The horse's innate intelligence that came from their need to survive is to have this almost like Ubuntu concept of like, you are another me, or I see the divine in you. It's like, in my mind, they're always living that. So depending right. on how you gauge intelligence, I mean, I had a friend ask me that and goes, well, why do they poop where they eat if they're so smart? But I think we can override our animal body and instincts, and yet our instinctual animal body has a lot to give us. And that is another area where I think they're superior because they're connected to the earth at all times.
Yeah. I think if you go back far enough in the human race, we probably also pooped where we ate. I think there's a really early version of us that did.
Exactly.
Matisse, on your website, you offer one-on-one mentorships, private sessions, in-person experiences. Can you talk about these services and who do these appeal to generally?
Yes, I offer full days and half days at the ranch for groups. That's my main offering. It includes constellation work for everybody that comes. It's an incredible place for people that are able to come in person. It's an all-female ranch. We've got lavender farms, dinners, workshops going on all the time. So that is the heart of my in-person work.
That's in Ojai, California, right?
Yes, Ojai, California. We're kind of between Los Angeles and Santa Barbara. And what I'm most excited about is I've been offering teacher trainings 3 times a year. So there's a learning and practice community that involves both equine facilitated learning and horsemanship, how to work with horses, and how to do the constellation work. Some of my long-term mentorships are for people that want to learn one or both of those things, but are not able to come in person. And more often, my one-on-one work is about creative expression. So people that are launching a business, a book, a brand, a new creative part of their life and want some holding, guidance, support, so that what they're creating is coming from the truth of their heart. It's coming from connection to source, spirit, earth, whatever you consider the higher inner power source. And really what I provide is support for all the places the bumps usually come up in the creative process, the self-creative process. And where that leads ultimately is to just supporting people through major transitions, leaving partnerships or careers or needing to focus on their soul work. It's just a loving, long-term holding that uses plants, uses the animals, uses my toolkit, but really is about helping someone to refine their toolkit and their process that serves their deepest truth and fullest expression.
And do you, when people come out for this, do you lodge them at the ranch? Is this like a retreat? Is it more like a school? How would you characterize it?
It's kind of a hybrid. It's made for one day experiences. When we have multi-day experiences, we rent a house locally or people find their own accommodations. Yeah. The ranch is like Hogwarts to me. It is.
That's great.
This incredible place for skill sharing and the exchange of different healing arts and creative arts. And it's set in a thriving, healthy ecosystem of horses, donkeys, sheep, cows, children, mothers. It's our intention to have a feminine village. Sure. That we're returning to that concept and creating an environment to encourage the growth of that support.
That's great. That's great. Everyone check that out. She will leave the social media and kind of website stuff here at the end for you to go check that out and see how you can enroll in that. But as we start to wrap this up, Matisse, I just have a couple other things. What's your daily self-care routine? Tell me what's your personal thing? Is it prayer, meditation? What's your diet like? Give me your day of. What is it? What's your self-care?
Oh, thank you for asking. I've gone through so many iterations of this, and currently I have been in a group container for practice. It's called Forma. I'll leave that information too. So my spiritual and self-care focal point has been doing morning pages and doing yoga of the voice. So my morning practice involves cacao, usually some kind of warm plant ally, warm drink. And I have my playlist that tunes me in. I do free writing for 750 words. And then I do vocalization into song. That's my personal tune up that I'm committed to in these containers. Like for right now it's 40 days. And diet wise, I do eat varied animal protein. I don't eat it all the time, but I think that's important for me. Bone broth. I love living in California because we have farmers market with really healthy food all year long. But I've really lightened up on myself about my practices because ultimately, you know, they say chop wood, carry water, but it's like shovel shit, clean the water buckets has been the most important spiritual practice of all. And even just being with them and grooming them brings me into a meditative state. So I also do some writing and the voice dictation while I'm just freestyling with the herd.
Yeah. Yeah. That's great. I like that you talk about doing it, you know, in containers and how you've changed this up a lot. I do it. I call it my chapter stop. I chapter stop it. I go with something else, but I change a lot up. I change my sleep schedules up. I change my diet. Mm-hmm. I change, like I'll aggressively change things up, but I think we're always searching for the next best way for self-care, you know? And it's, again, like I mentioned, I think before the shows, the ingredients that make people what they are, our self-care is also, let's add a little of this and take a little of that away. And we'll always do that and refine as we get older and our views change or our bodies don't work like they used to, or, you know, or whatever it is we have to modify. So I love that. I love that.
Yeah.
How can people find you out
like,
there? Oh, yeah, go ahead.
To me, it's like jazz. So, you know, Miles Davis improvises like a friggin' musician on stage, but he also does his scales every day or did. And so to me, it's like having the discipline in these focused containers then allows you to freeform and trust yourself and go like be really gentle with your needs, maybe shifting and not make being so righteous and demanding on your physical body. And really just it can be a very self-honoring process to allow yourself to adapt as you need. That's what I found for me and my
clients.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great. That's great. I'm glad you said that. How can people find you out there on social media and the interwebs and all that good stuff?
Great. So my website is my name, MatisseWilliams.com. And that has all information about my containers and offerings. But I'm a millennial gal, so I am on the Instagram. And that is at the handle Tisse, or at T-I-S-S-E.
Great, great. Matisse, thanks so much for coming out today. It's been far too long since I've seen you, even far longer since I've, you know, been in the company of you anywhere. Hopefully we can cross paths somewhere, whether it's in New York or California, both states I love to be in.
Great.
So hopefully I can see you and some horses at some point.
Absolutely. I welcome you when you come out here, whenever that might be.
Great. Well, you have a good day and we'll talk soon, okay?
Great. Thank you so much.
Metacortex Publishing hopes that you've enjoyed this presentation.
Please take a moment to listen to some other podcast offerings from Metacortex Publishing.
The No Earthly Explanation podcast investigates the things that are unexplainable. Hosted by world-renowned investigative researcher Donald R. Schmidt and scientist Ellie Ringo. Follow them as they look for evidence for things that have no earthly explanation. Available anywhere you listen to podcasts.
Cult Following is a podcast that studies the personalities and common traits of cult leaders and their followers. Get the real story behind these infamous and oftentimes tragic cults from a new perspective, through exhaustive research, and from interviews with people that were there. Available anywhere you listen to podcasts.
Hi, I'm Father Daniel DePlantis, a Catholic priest, martial artist, and host of the Karate Priest podcast. Have you ever wondered what the church teaches about different topics? Are you a martial arts enthusiast or just someone who wants to learn more about martial arts? I'd like to invite you to join me and many guests on my podcast as we cover topics of faith, everyday living, and martial arts on the Karate Priest podcast.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. Please be sure to rate and review this episode. This podcast is produced by Todd Fisher and Anthony Smith and is distributed by Metacortex Publishing. This podcast is copyright. Any previously trademarked or copyright content is used by permission. Information and opinions stated in this podcast should not be construed as medical advice. Please be sure to visit the official website for Metacortex Publishing at metacortexpublishing.com or find us on social media for other unique content.